Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for spending your lunch hour at this series on art in the long view. My name is Heather Hess, and I will be opening up the discussion, and then I will provide the floor to my colleague, Elaine Ten Noy. And this program, just to do a few legalese things, a few notes in advance that to note that raw eating, you know, raw and undercooked foods may, you know, cause illness. So, yes, that will be important, not for the first 10 minutes, but at the end of this. So you have a sense of what you're in for. So run away now while you still have the chance. So cooking, and specifically meat, parallels and intersects with artistic process in many intriguing ways, some of which I'd like to sketch for you in this introduction. And it has also been an enduring subject in the history of art. Meat, in so many ways, opens up issues of time and mortality. A vocational textbook for future butchers and meat sellers from 1933 declared the central problem of the meat industry to be, quote, that of keeping meat over a period of time in a condition suitable for use as food. From the moment something is slaughtered, it begins to rot. And the argument has also been made that the process of decay starts the moment something is even born. This would seem to be at odds with the conventional definitions of art. That is, the general understanding before the advent of modernism that art was something permanent and addressed higher values than the quotidian and ultimately transitory irritations of everyday life. In my opening remarks, I will be briefly skipping throughout time and place, discussing the ethics, aesthetics, and culture of meat. I'd like to ask you all to hold your questions and comments until the end, but both Elaine and I are very eager to hear your thoughts and to open up a discussion on these ideas. Meat is about distinctions between human and animal, between body and the mind. And meat is ultimately about power. That means the decisions we make collectively about what is appropriate to eat and the rituals we have developed around its slaughter, preparation, and presentation have come to be about finding our place in the world. Humans hunt animals and cook and eat their flesh, and that's what we call meat. The Bible sanctions this type of killing. Supposedly before the fall, humans were vegetarians living in peace with animals. The book of Genesis tells us, every moving thing that liveth shall be meat for you. Of course, we don't actually eat every living beast. Religions have deemed certain animals unclean. And in the United States, we don't eat our pets, which we have named and welcomed into our homes. But in the topsy-turvy world of Lewis Carroll's Through the Looking Glass, Alice is introduced to a leg of mutton at a banquet. When Alice asks if she can carve a slice, the Red Queen responds, certainly not. It is not etiquette to cut anyone you have been introduced to. Remove the joint. This goes on until a hungry Alice slices into a pudding to which she was earlier introduced. And the pudding responds, what impertinence! I wonder how you'd like it if I were to cut a slice out of you, you creature. This is the kind of response that would not have surprised Francis Bacon. The painting on the left belongs to MoMA, although it's not currently on view, and the one on the right is from the Art Institute of Chicago. Bacon once told an interviewer, of course we are all meat. We are potential carcasses. If I go into a butcher shop, I always think it's surprising that I wasn't there instead of the animal. He made painting right after World War II. The central figure is one of the dictator types that had turned Europe into a slaughterhouse. Bacon substituted a splayed carcass from Rembrandt and Soutine for a crucified Jesus. On the right, the figure of the Pope, which is borrowed from Velázquez, has been frozen, preserved, that is, into a terrifying screen. I'd be remiss in my art historical duties if I didn't show you the precedents where Bacon is drawing on. But back to Bacon. Bacon was a non-believer. His is a world without a god, where bodily rot is all that there is in the end. Bacon gives us a look at a world of horror, the horrors of a butcher shop where the distinctions between flesh and meat have been obliterated, and all that and all could be offered up for consumption. The fear of blurring these distinctions between appropriate to eat and not have guided the rituals around the serving of meat. In a twofold way, this sets us apart from animals and was seen as establishing our dominant role in nature. First, we cook our meat. We do not rip into it raw like an animal. Secondly, and again setting us apart from beasts, we use utensils and follow a system of etiquette that has developed over, really, hundreds of years. In Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, Brutus exhorts his fellow conspirators, "Let us carve him as a dish fit for the gods, not hew him as a carcass for the hounds." Maintaining these distinctions raises their act, that is the murderers in Julius Caesar, from animalistic murder to a sanctioned sacrifice. Table manners were a key part of the so-called civilizing process, that broad change in European behavior that shaped society in the West since the Middle Ages. Carving, which is the ritualized presentation of cooked meat at table, which is what you're seeing here on the screen, in particular demonstrates that distinction between meat and animal and the triumph of intellectual control over base animality. This image from a 17th century book on carving is teaching us a highly mannered, that is, artificial and learned, method of holding carving utensils. No one just holds a knife like that. The mind here is guiding the hand. Carving, like dancing or fencing or jousting or any of those other kinds of behaviors, demanded practice and careful study so that it appeared effortless. This mattered because it was a demonstration of the mind's mastery over the body, and it was part of theories of taste and control that elevated intellectual pursuits over bodily urges, and were seen as curbs on gluttony and other types of uncivilized behavior. In the 18th century, Philip Stanhope, the 4th Earl of Chesterfield, wrote to his bastard son that, quote, "A man who tells you gravely he cannot carve may as well tell you he cannot blow his nose. It is both as easy and as necessary." Of course, neither of these behaviors, carving or nose blowing, are natural or self-evident. What constituted polite nose blowing, using a cloth, not examining the cloth's contents, as if one expected to find gemstones, as one 16th century Italian treatise told us, and not doing it at the dinner table, were practices that educated Europeans only began adopting in the 16th century. And, you know, we might laugh at this, so I'll just point to this recent public health initiative to convince us to sneeze or cough into our sleeves rather than into our hands. Socially expected behaviors change. And so really this is part of this incredibly long development over the course of really hundreds of years. And, of course, as anyone who's confronted with a turkey on Thanksgiving Day can attest, the elegant dismemberment of a bird in front of an audience is really anything but easy or self-evident. And so, in the 20th century, the idea of carving at table, where the presentation of food is a grand performance, offering a visual feast that functioned as part of a broader social ritual, this gave way to speedier forms of consumption more suited to everyday middle-class life. The hamburger, here celebrating Klaus Oldenburg's Floorburger, which you can see after lunch on the sixth floor, perfectly encapsulates the idea of fast food and this new culture. You don't need silverware. There's no mastery of table manners, nor do you need a special servant to carve for you. In the 20th century, consumers went from buying meat from a butcher to getting prepackaged meats hygienically sealed in plastic wrap from the supermarket. The round shape of the hamburger patty gives absolutely no indication of the shape of the animal it came from. And with mass sort of consumer farms, it's possible that a hamburger is composed of the ground beef of hundreds of animals. And it's sandwiched here between two slices of processed white bread bun. This also then fits with the growing distaste in recognizing the animals that we eat. The squeamishness is part of an incredibly long development, and indeed another one of these aspects of the civilizing process, and is not a contemporary invention. In 1826, William Hazlitt, the failed romantic painter but successful writer and critic, and the friend of Coleridge and Wordsworth, stated that we should not leave the form standing to reproach us with our gluttony and cruelty. I hate to see a rabbit trussed or a hare brought the form which it occupied while living. So manners changed. Conceptions of cruelty changed. Butchery, an act that Adam Smith called a brutal and odious business, was pushed ever more to the marginal spaces of the city and hidden behind closed doors, as was the act of carving itself. I would like to end my introductory remarks, then, by looking at sausages, another one of those type of foods we'd rather, most of the time, not know that much about. So Francis Bacon, this time the early modern natural philosophy, not the painter we saw earlier, advised, so 16th century philosopher here, he advised, some books are to be tasted, others to be swallowed, some few to be chewed and digested. He meant that as a guide to reading. But Diderot, whose work is also on view at MoMA now on the second floor, made that idea literally possible with his literature sausages. Rote took books by writers he did not like and ground them into sausages, following a traditional sausage recipe. And you're seeing that on the left side of the screen. He just replaced ground beef with ground books. He likened his artistic studio to a kitchen, and in a neat reversal of the usual hierarchies of cooking versus high culture. In the literature sausages, Rote transformed literature, something meant as an enduring testament to human intellectual achievement, into one of the basest of foodstuffs. Sausages aren't peacocks, capons, or even a perfect cut of steak, but can't contain the parts and pieces we'd rather not know about. The example on the left, which is also on view upstairs, Martin Walser's Halftime, is shown hung, being cured and dried. Rote's literary sausages transform the library into a butcher shop. Time is the central issue in Rote's work, and his use of unconventional materials opens up questions of longevity and the role of the work of art in the long view. Libraries, like museums, preserve work for the future. The changing appearance of the artwork as it decays is another main characteristic of Rote's work. We can stave off, but never entirely stop decay by storing and exhibiting these objects under ideal conditions. And Rote objected firmly to the idea of restoring a work to a previous state. But significantly, Rote chose sausages here, not an immediately perishable type of foodstuff like fresh fish, but something that, properly cured and dried, can hold you over through the lean months. And that's how sausage traditionally functioned. But what if we actually consumed Rote's books? If we ate them as sausages rather than looked at them as art? Sarah Suzuki in the catalog to MoMA's current exhibition made the explicit point about the next step in this transformation in the chain from book to food when she wrote that, quote, "Yes, they are ingested, but then they are excreted. In Rote's eyes, nothing lasts, and it all ends up as shit in the end." So I'd like to suggest that this brings us back to that distinction between the head and the hand, between detached intellectual satisfaction and immediate bodily pleasures, between the lasting and the ephemeral. And so now for something slightly different, I will turn this over to my colleague, Elaine. Thank you.
Just a moment. I know some of you. My name's Elaine Tignot, and I'm going to show you how to kind of cut up some things and use knives in ways you might not normally use them. So the first thing I'm going to do is open this oyster. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So, an oyster. There's a little mark. Let's see if I can do it. All right. There's sort of an edge here where the two oyster or where the two shells meet, and that's where we want to place the tip of the oyster knife. So, some people do this in their hands. I find that if you put it on a table, it doesn't move, and that's good. So I'm just placing it in there, and I'm prying it, and prying it, and then I can feel it's kind of between the two shells now, and I just kind of give it a little pop. And usually that's really all you need to do. Sometimes it fights a little bit more than that, but usually not. Then wipe off the tip of your knife. And just, there's a little muscle I'll show you when I open the shell. There's a little muscle here. This is where the muscle attaches to this shell, keeps it closed. And I just cut underneath it as I felt it, and it came off, like that. And then we just loosen it a little bit. Someone want to taste this? Here you go. Here's some lemon if you prefer lemon. Yes. Kids, raw and uncooked seafood. It's a big danger. Oh, there's a fork if you want a fork.
Sorry. Well, I'm carving the utensil person.
Right. Thank you, Heather. Here, I'll take that. I didn't think about this part.
We'll just put them over here. Off stage.
What just happened? Anybody? That's right. And then we ate it.
And enjoyed it.
Would anybody like to open one? We can try this a little bit. Okay. All right. And who are you?
I'm Peter.
Hi, Peter. Hi. Have we ever met before?
No. Okay. Unfortunately, this
is great.
All right.
Well, great to meet you.
Yes.
Okay.
You too.
So let me pick out one that might look easy to do. There's one.
Okay.
Okay. Have you done this before?
I have.
All right. Now. Okay.
So here's the sort of the joint or hinge.
It's always hard to tell sometimes where the cup. Like you want to put it. So
the cup is down?
The cup is down.
Okay. So, looks like the cup convex.
Yeah. Let's try this one because I want you to succeed.
Ah,
and this
okay.
one is confusing.
That one's ambiguous?
Yeah, it's an ambiguous.
Ambiguous bivalve?
It's an ambiguous hermaphrodite.
Ah, okay.
So, yeah. So just push. I'll try this one. That was good. How you doing?
Oh. Just trying not to break the shell.
Yeah, they're very brittle today. I broke a couple doing it.
You're right, it just gives way at a certain moment.
And then did you cut off the little piece? And then it's nice to cut off the, like, cut it around and that. Looks like we have that, an extra piece of shell in there.
Oh, I know. Hmm. So just, you're saying just free it up from them.
Yeah. Here, mm-hmm. try this. This is a clam knife that's got a little sharper blade on it. Sometimes a clam knife works better on oysters. I don't know why. their shape's different. They have a sharper blade to them.
That's free.
Okay, do you want to eat that one?
Sure.
All right. Are you sure you can?
If I may, did you read, I know I
did
can.
You read, okay, did you, as long as you read the disclaimer.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I digested the disclaimer.
All right.
That is delicious.
Yeah.
I recommend that. Thank you.
I kind of wonder why it is that people love oysters, and part of it, I think, has to do with that idea that it's really fresh, like you actually know that it was alive, and it's like sort of partially alive when you're eating it. And I think part of that is actually the delight in it, and it's also, of course, horrifying to a lot of people as well. So it's challenging in a lot of ways. Tighten up a little bit. I know, weren't they? Wow, this one has a barnacle on it. Whatever you call that nose thing. It's crazy. Okay. Lobster. I'm going to show you how to make lobster sashimi. There's a couple of things you might want to know about lobsters. Everybody always asks, like, how do you tell a boy from a girl? Okay, this is a boy, and this is a girl. And let me show you. Come on. If you look at these two last spinnerets, they're soft, right here. And this one, you'll see there's these two hard things. That's the boy. And what they do is they bring them together, and this is actually becomes like a penis, and it inserts the sperm sac into the female. That's just an aside that has nothing to do with anything. Okay, so to make lobster sashimi, you cut the lobster in half, basically. Oh, we'll just place him. Place her to you. Okay, and then what happens is that you can do this with a knife, like most textbooks say, use a knife. Oh. But it's actually easier to do with a pair of scissors, I found. I know, you guys are thinking it's moving. They have very simple nervous systems that are completely distributed through their system. So there's something that is sort of like a brain in them, but it's more like the brain that you would have if, like, when you're, some people say there's a, you have, your stomach has a brain, that your GI system has a brain that's separate from your brain. And, you know, I'm sorry, I should have warned some of you back about that I was going to do this. I was so focused on doing it that I had kind of promised, like, I'm seeing Elizabeth, and she's, I know. So there we have the meat. And basically, I just sort of poached it out of there. We'll just make this a little prettier. You know what I'm going to ask next. Do you want to try it? Does anybody?
Sure.
Absolutely. Charlie, I know you. Well, there was this woman back here that who put her hand up after Charlie, and I'm sorry. Okay, do you want the boy or the girl?
The boy, naturally.
Okay. So what you're going to do is you're going to just sort of cut right through. Be sure that the legs aren't underneath, because sometimes you can kind of back away at it. If you don't want to look at it.
I don't mind looking at it.
Okay, you just don't want to touch it?
No, I don't mind touching.
Okay, be careful.
Okay.
There you go. So take it straight down.
This way?
Yeah. There you go.
That's it.
Okay. Hi, thank you.
Now
you want to just take scissors and flip it over. And... Do you feel it licking around in your hand? It's a little kind of intense.
I think I do the same thing.
You or I would be kind of not moving by this point, I think.
Not moving at all. Just keep running around. I really like to eat sashimi, so...
That's sort of...
You heard that, didn't you?
I want to head down to the most department.
Okay. How you doing?
I'm okay, I think.
Oh, I didn't ask you your name.
I'm Zoe.
Great. Oh, my God, you are Zoe.
I am.
I do know her.
Know
oh, my
her.
God.
Not well.
We know each other on the internet more than anything. And did you come to the cookie party? You did. That was such a crazy night.
There were a lot of cookies.
There were a lot of cookies, and somebody showed up with a meat slicer.
Really?
Did you miss that? A friend of mine just decided that he would give me a meat slicer that had a meat slicer. And he showed up at my door with a meat slicer.
I think I left the door until I was home.
Yeah.
Otherwise, maybe you.
Yeah.
things have gone differently. Either it got me or I got it.
Did you get caught?
I don't know. There's something.
Did you use a...
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. I think a bad teacher.
Dang,
are you kidding?
Let's try this again. All right. So usually...
I think it might be
that.
It doesn't seem to be coming from anywhere around me.
Okay.
And I don't feel like...
Okay.
So it's something there.
Yeah, just sort of
sleep like it.
I think it is from that.
Yeah. I don't want to put, blood on something that was
a shame. Maybe we'll put that one
aside. It's a different display.
Well, Zoe's working on that.
No, I'm pretty sure it's it.
Do you want to try some?
Yes. Are you going to try this one? That's...
See? Wow, that's fascinating.
You need to believe me.
Yeah, it's crazy. No, this one's red inside, too.
Okay. It is. It's super... Kind of like a
it's like that's maybe
attached.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't even know that.
Oh yeah.
Or should
sure.
I just
no, just
eat the whole
thing. Go ahead, eat it.
I'm gonna go.
After all that, you're giving me chopsticks, really?
For everybody else,
Great.
So
we'll put,
should I put it on there?
Yeah, let's put it in there.
Okay.
Wow, this is so red. Okay. And do you want chopsticks?
Yes, but I would like to do
a little washing thing. Then that's a little ponzu. I'm just going to place this right here. And as I'm tidying up, anybody who'd like to try some, please go for it. And in 1 second, we'll get back to the fish thing. Of course. They go home. An interesting thing is this, the board is gelled. That is actually, people don't think oyster or lobsters have blood, but this is actually the blood, the oyster, I mean the lobster.
Should I leave the shell here?
Just put it on the ground or the whatever table. usually they don't move this much, but I think they're just like, you know, it's MoMA.
Yeah.
Maybe an art block too.
I didn't cook these, the kitchen here did, which was so great because I really didn't want to take a cab with a bunch of cooked fish. I'm going to show you how to debone fish at table, because I think that that is something that we hardly, you know, somehow it's a lost art, and this way you can go to a Chinese restaurant, order a whole fish, and nobody's like saying, oh my God, let me do it now. There are all kinds of kind of fancy fish cutlery that one can use, but I just wanted to make sure that y'all knew that you could just do this at home with your regular tableware. So that's what I'm going to do today, is just do the tableware. I think we're going to move him off stage.
Oh.
We'll bring him back. For... There we go. These fish are, like, way bigger than I thought they would be. I thought they'd been. But we'll try it on a plate anyway. Can you see? Okay. So, crazy thing is that there are people who order fish. Like, it used to be that you wanted the head and the tail on, so you knew what it was and whether it was fresh or not. And somewhere along the line, people started to freak out about the head and tail being on because I think that the other morning I was kind of Googling about fish cutlery, and this guy in the UK asked this question, and he prefaced it by saying, my family and I were sitting down to fish and chips, and we wondered... And as one does, one started talking about fish cutlery. And I'm thinking, fish and chips and fish cutlery, of course they don't get it. So this is a whole fish. I'm going to use... This is a bronzino. It's just a Mediterranean fish in the bass family. What I normally do is there's a seam here that I sort of follow. And they've already done this, I think. No, they haven't. It's hard to do when they're cold like this. But you want to follow... the skin. You want to just pull out this fin at the top first. Very hard to do when it's cold. But there you go. And then normally I would leave the skin on, but it's fighting with me because it's cold and rubbery, so I'm going to take it off. And I might regret this choice. There we go. Oh, lobster dude is still moving. Yeah, those so there we have one side of the fillet. I'm just slowly working the meat off the bone. And then I take sort of a diagonal cut here because there's this kind of hard bony thing under the neck of the fish. And then we'll flip this side down also. Take all this goodness out. I won't be asking you all to do this. I thought I would, but these are really too hard because they're cold. They're just stuffed with a little lemon and some herbs. And then this is sort of my favorite part of doing this, is that normally, if all goes well, one can work the knife under there and release. I'm going to use my hands. Release this sort of skeleton. Take the head off. Now there's little bones, like sort of rib bone things. And you have to be careful of those. And usually what I do is I just sort of scrape a little bit this way. Bottom for them. Feel for them. This is actually a lot easier when it's cold, I mean when it's hot, because the meat kind of releases from it a little easier, and the collagen that forms when the fish is cold, the jelly, isn't there. So that's what that looks like. Sometimes I bring tweezers and I just look. I think I got them. Oh. Now, I used to actually, in a former life, I was a waitress, and I used to have to do this about 20 times a night, really fast. I'm a little out of practice now. All right, so that doesn't look so pretty, but then we put it on a new plate. And I think I'm going to try this. We're going to slide that on there. Kind of a classic Italian parsley and bread sauce. I get it tonight. I promise you.
Say parsley and bread.
Parsley and bread. And you just, soak bread in a little red wine vinegar. I know, adulterated is terrible. All the soft foods. So, I was going to do a couple of two more with somebody, but I think we'll just sort of get on to the lecture so we can actually talk. Oh, I need this water. Other things we eat live. This is what a fish fork and knife looks like, if you were wondering. They have kind of thinner tines. The ends are a little thinner, so you can actually tease up the bones, the fine bones on the fish. Ribs. Eating mammals is sort of like a different level of eating than a lot of people. Like, I know a lot of people who will eat fish, but they won't eat meat, and they'll eat chicken, but they won't eat mammals. So I'm going to share some thoughts with you. How do I do this? Do I just push this? This is a video. I want it to start. Do you know how to do that? Oh, I'll use the stupid thing. Yes. Okay, I think if I hit enter. No? That didn't work. No, that's not it.
It's the next slide.
No, this is it. This slide is a video. Okay. Maybe it's usually like if you just click it, it does it. There we go. All right. There doesn't seem to be sound. We don't have sound. But basically he's saying, "Hey lady, do you want to try some sausage?" And then she's like, "Wow, that's really great sausage." And she buys some. And then he's like, "Oh man, the sausage, I have to refill the machine. It's super fresh. Hold on a moment. You know, we make our own sausage." And she's like, "What? What are you doing? What are you doing? Oh my God." Oh, what's that? Okay. And we'll try this again. All right. In 1997, I met some French farmers, and I met them kind of accidentally because they were neighbors of my friend, and we were throwing this big party, and we decided that it would be appropriate to have a ham for this party. So we went next door, and we bought a ham from Brigitte. And Brigitte, and I hadn't ever been on a French farm, so I was like, "Wow, what's all this?" And Brigitte explained to me how the hams were made and how in January they actually kill the hams because because the whole world is a refrigerator then, so they can just do it outdoors. So it was this very rustic farm. So I invited myself back in January.
And this is footage of an actual pig slaughtering. So if you want to look away, that's fine. No one will judge you. Let's see if this works. Okay, it's over. So, meat. Why is it okay? I've always wondered. Why is it okay to... why was it okay for me to open an oyster and eat it in front of everybody? And that was a problem for some people. You know, why is it okay that people, well, let's put it this way. Like, if life is like one, is the spark of life is valuable, then why is it okay to eat a plate of oysters, but only eat like just one part of a pig, or not eat a pig because we're only eating like one part of a pig that we share, because that's one life that it's spread over a lot of people consuming it. I'm not provoking anybody. I've just always wondered this, and these are kind of questions I'm going to throw out as we go. I have this series of pictures I take because I like butchers, and I always take pictures of butchers whenever I can. So this is just a few pictures of some butchers. This one's in Korea. this is Jamie and his rabbit. You might know the guy in the middle, and of course you know me. The guy in the red shirt is actually the most important guy in the picture, because he is like the Mick Jagger of the meat world. His name is Dario Cecchini, and he is a butcher. And in Italy. And he's kind of responsible for bringing back the artisanal antique butchery movement in Europe. This is a guy you can't see named Adam Tiberio, who's a New York butcher. And he's breaking down a piece of buffalo right there. And this is my friend Gaetano, who worked with Dario, that I met. I met Guy through Dario. And he's holding out a pork belly, a pancetta. It's fresh now, and I bought it from him, and then I cured it, and I made this. I live on the 15th floor of an apartment in Harlem. And any of you who live in a high-rise building know that you have no control over your heat. So my apartment is always 80 degrees, and I cannot cure meat. So I built this thing I call the pancetta humidor. And it sticks out my window. And it's made of poplar. Doesn't really matter what it's made of, but it's just this little wooden cabinet that sticks outside, and it's got holes drilled in it, and so it stays cold. And I dry my meat in it. So there's a pancetta in there, which is kind of like the Italian version of bacon, without the smoke, and a duck breast prosciutto. There's a good picture of it, and it's snowing outside. This is what the pancetta looked like about 5 weeks later, and it was really good. And I, this is what I did with the first bit of it. Was made a pasta. This is, these are different duck breast prosciuttos I made. And this is a piece called The Three-Legged Pig, based on my relationship with those French farmers. I recut all the video I shot into a four-channel video installation. The top, what is that, right corner with the guy, he's my friend Yannick, and I told him the old three-legged pig joke. You know, does somebody know it? Anybody know it? Okay, so it's traveling salesman joke. Travel salesman is driving down the road, sees a three-legged pig, and is really confused. And so he drives a little further, gets to the farm, and he asks the farmer, "What's up with the three-legged pig?" And the farmer says, "Oh, let me tell you about that pig. That pig is so smart that he saved my life. My tractor fell over, and the pig came along and he grabbed me, and he, you know, and then the tractor blew up. Like, he pulled me away from the flames." And he's like, "Oh, well, that's very interesting. What about the pig? Why does he only have three legs?" Anyway, it goes on like this, and the guy tells, like, five different stories of how the pig is so smart and everything, and finally the salesman has it up to here, and he says, "You know, please just tell me what's with the leg." And the farmer says, "Well, you know, pig that smart and that courageous and that talented, you wouldn't want to eat them all at once." So, anyway, so I tell Yannick the story, and he decides as the week goes on that he has a version of the story, but he tells it in his Gascon patois, which is southwest France. It's very farm country. And he tells this story that's like 20 minutes long, all in this like crazy, badass French thing. And so that channel is him telling the story, and then there's one channel of them just making sausage, one of the slaughter, and one of the actual breaking down of the pig. There's some pictures from then. Video stills. I also made a book that is the script, the translation, with some pictures, video stills. The fourth leg is a live performance that was done in conjunction with a video installation in which my dear friend Gaetano breaks down half a pig for everybody. So I ordered a pig. I called my ninja butcher guy and I said, "I need a pig that is weighs about as much as I do." So, or half a pig that weighs about as much as I do, because I really wanted the people in the seminar to look at the pig and actually see something that was about the same size as the person who was hosting them. So there were lucky about a dozen people who were there. And we cut up the whole pig in about 3 hours at Postmaster's Gallery. And there we have it. And everybody took pieces of pig home. And I provided snacks. This is actually a porchetta di testa, which is a rolled pig face, basically. It's kind of like a pig loaf, except made with just the face. You take all the meat off the face and you roll it in it itself, and then you poach it very slowly. It's really delicious. We don't need to talk about that. This little piggy, I don't have any pictures for this little piggy because this is a project that I'm doing now, or starting now. It is a project in which I am adopting 5 pigs all over the world in various ham-centric parts of the world. So that would be, right now, the list is Italy, France, Spain, Virginia, which is not a country, but kind of a country, and China. And the idea is I'm going to find a pig and document it from birth to ham, with everything that goes in between. That will involve the raising of it, the slaughter of it, the various ways it's prepared, the fresh meat part is prepared, and then the various ways that the ham, 24 months later, will be served. So that is, it's a big project. I just got a creative capital grant for it, so I'm trying to figure out, now that I've promised to do it, how that's going to happen. So we'll see. But let's talk about sausage, because that's why we're here. This is my friend Yannick with his father, Claude, who actually taught him how to make blood sausage during this time. And so this is one of the things they do. Blood sausage is sort of like zucchini bread in Gascony. Everybody has a lot, and they everywhere you go at that particular time of year, they're kind of hoisting blood sausage on you. So I ate a lot of blood sausage. They hang it out to dry once it's been poached, and that's Claude actually died like a few months later. He had cancer, and this was sort of his last kind of passing on of tradition to his son. It's kind of an intense week. This is Denis, and he is wiping his sausages down, and these are dried sausages, so that they're different from the ones, the Italian sausages we get. They're the dry ones. Can we pass the sausage around? So what he's doing is, like, this mold grows on the outside of the sausage. Making dried meat is all about controlling water, available water. And so it's about, like, controlling the way things ferment and grow in the meat by slowing it down, by controlling the water in it. So some things can grow and some things can't. And so that's what all of that is about. So what he's doing right now is there's this kind of white mold that grows on the outside, and it's like sort of the equivalent of like a camembert kind of mold. And he does this like once a week. He walks around and he takes a cognac-soaked rag and he just wipes the sausages down. Meat grinder. These are my first sausages. They're a lamb and pork sausage I made recently. And these are the cooked version because they're fresh sausages. So what you're eating kind of looks like this. It's a dry sausage, and it's made by curing the meat. It's by grinding the meat, stuffing it inside the intestines of the animal, and then and you've added a certain amount of salt to it to kind of control the available water in it, and then they're hung in an environment, a cool environment, so they can dry for a long time without rotting.
The salt is
a preservative. Sometimes they add saltpeter. It's called pink salt. which is a nitrate, and some people don't. The traditional people I work with don't use it, but the commercial people use it because it's, I guess, required. It's an easier shortcut to ensure that certain things don't grow in the meat. So I'm going to tell you about my life's work now. This is the long-term thing that I want to do, is that I want to become a sausage when I die. I want somebody to make me into a sausage, and I want to be a dry sausage so I last forever. And I figure everything about me kind of, it's hard because it's like there are laws against it here in the States about what one can do with the human body, but I'm figuring it out. So in the end, like, my life's work is really, it's about making a will that is a cookbook of me. And you know, it's inspiring to see something like a Diderot piece, because that's where I want to be. I want to be the sausage that's hanging on the sixth floor. I want to be next to the Joseph Boy's meat and fat things. And then, like, you know, and if you want to buy my remains and eat me, that's okay also. It's because I figure, you know, it's there's so many levels in which one can enjoy another person's life. And I'm willing to do any of that. But, you know, once I die of natural causes. So, all right.
Ready to take questions? All right.
One of the reasons I chose sausage is because it's ground up, and I figure I expect to live another 50 years. So I'm very healthy, I'm very happy with being alive, so I figure if I die of natural causes, it's going to be when I'm 100 and something years old. So 100 and something years old. So, you know, that's one of the reasons I think, grinding is probably better. Slow braise also works, but, you know. You know, I told my doctor this story. Like, I went in for a checkup, and he got very excited. And he was, and he came back in, like, he went out to sort of check on something and came back in, and he was like, oh, I got into a gown or something, and he was like, and you know what? You can use your own intestines. So, yes, I guess I will.
Always been on pork belly features.
Hmm. I figure we keep like pork. Yeah, I think that's true. Are you a butcher?
No, I'm a private chef, so I do a lot of I've actually been here for a really long time before I started.
But yes. Yeah, I think so. I think I would. I think the idea is that various iterations. That I'll probably write a few wills because this will go on for a while. But I think
there will be recipes within the will. So the will be a cookbook, will literally be a cookbook. I'm being really passive. Go ahead.
So, but then, how do you explain the
choice
to you? That was water, and then you just play, kind of play the novelty. There is that huge difference.
Tell me what the difference is.
Well, I mean, there's water, like there's murder, there's killing. And then there's something that dies of natural causes. So it keeps you so nice, so it's, you know, like, but you can't control the thing, I'm sorry, but, you know, in the office, things like that. I mean, it seems like there's, like, a huge amount. I always feel like it's only involved with Main Street, and it makes those ties. And the blog is,
I think there's either way there is a sort of separation between the reason we don't eat our pets, the reason it's harder to eat things that are named is that cannibalism happens. You know, it's like the more something becomes a part of our family, the harder it is that we eat it. And I think that's one of the questions I have.
Also, a distinction if we're talking about when you're slaughtering something or killing it, just historically, that you would want to eat like the highest sort of class foods or younger things. So, veal over an ox that's been working in the field, the oxen that's been milked, abusive burden for 5 years, no longer can serve its function as a labor animal. That would have been slaughtered by a peasant family or whatever, and that would have been, you know, the only thing they would have eaten. It would not have been tasty, whereas it's a sign of wealth and status, et cetera, that you can slaughter something and have it in a sort of this young, fresh state. So, I mean, that also gets into history. So, cookery, and if this has been, you know, as a lifetime thing, I mean, you probably, maybe aren't actually going to taste good as a 105-year-old.
Yeah, well, I mean,
or maybe, you know, great, you know, maybe you would have been cured.
I guess that if I am lucky enough to know when I'm going to die, I would probably try to control my diet so I'm most delicious. But not knowing when I'm going to die, I just sort of feel like I should eat really well so I'm always delicious all the time.
We're all like leading to something that I was wondering about. If you found out, for example, you get very close to the age and you can die.
Uh-huh.
You found out somehow that if you were slaughtered, sausage tastes a lot better. I'm wondering, like, how committed would you be to the flavor of the sausage? You said, yeah, I'll give up however many lives it takes to make a tastier dish for everyone. So I'll get slaughtered like a pig rather than eating like an ox or fell over a...
I don't know.
There's sort of a slippery slope I'm implying there, which is, you know, how many years you give up, and at a certain point you say, like, I'm sure I'd be delicious, like, human veal sausage, so maybe at, like, 15, I'm like, this is worth the dinner.
I don't know. I mean, like, I want to at least outlive my parents because I think it would really upset them.
Is a hog just better the plumper it is?
There's different.
Would you have to figure out
Well, I am trying to. But yeah. Some of my Facebook friends know that I can post everything I eat, and I am. The joke is like I'm almost at my ideal weight of 400 pounds. You know, it's like I don't know, in the States, pigs are slaughtered earlier because the market wants lighter meat and less flavorful meat. In my French friends, the pigs that they slaughtered from my video
was closer to 2 years old. I think an American pig is, I think it's less than a year old. And, I was thinking like, 9 or 10 months. So they grow them for weight, and then when they hit that ideal weight, they kill them. The French are more concerned with actually raising a pig to a point where they're more tasty.
Historically, that also is going to the species of seasonality for us, that it's not just something that applies to vegetables that you can go to the green market and get, whatever. I mean, it was also applied to, slaughtering.
Yeah, you had this body
to get you through, and when
cold.
You were doing that, so that's another way.
This is not a question, are you?
I want to know, not to do with the analogy,
Some people say that, like, there's a the cheek of the pig, the face, basically, is made, the Italians make it into something that's sort of like bacon. It's called guanciale, because there's a layer of fat on the cheek, and then there's this kind of muscle that is worked a lot. So it's a different flavor. No, it has to do with how the muscle is used, basically, how much blood goes to it the way the muscle is used. The most tender parts of, like a filet mignon is a part of the cow that is not used very much. It's a small, thin muscle that is very tender because it's not a work muscle, whereas like a chuck is like from the shoulder, and the cow's walking and it's moving its head up and down, and all of that makes for a tougher piece of meat, but it is also more flavorful. So it takes certain kind of skills to know how to cook it to bring out the flavor. I think every part of the animal is delicious if you know how to make it.
Yes.
On meat or food?
Meat.
The relationship to meat started with the French farms, and that would be 1997. Until I die, and then afterwards too.
Even afterwards.
Yes, because I mean, one of the things I think like part of the topic of this whole series is this idea of an investment of time. And I think part of it is like that I think artists make art because they want to be immortal. They want something to last beyond themselves. They want to contribute to culture in a way that touches other people, and so part of them is on. One more question. I don't know. No, I mean, I think part of it is that we do taste more like pork than any other animal, or rather, pigs taste more like us than any other animal. From what I've been told, what I've read. But no, I've never eaten human beings. I wouldn't know myself.
Yeah.
So in that way, it's kind of interesting. In human flesh? Not especially. I mean, I people ask me what I haven't eaten and or what I will not eat, and I always say, well, I don't eat dog, but that was because I promised somebody. My ex-boyfriend sent me an email when I went to Korea for 3 months, and he sent me this email that said, "Elaine, please don't eat dog because dogs are our friends." And so I promised him that I wouldn't eat dog. So that is. But yeah, I will try anything once. I think it's always good to try anything.
There's a little bit of dust. If you want to taste anything, please feel free to. I'll put out some plastic forks. And do we have to get out of the room immediately?
Maybe we should tell you that.
Okay, but let's end this part.